Love Osho podcast brings you the real stories of the people whose lives have been inspired and transformed by Osho. We explore why thousands of people are falling in love with Osho and where to find them. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome to the Love Osho podcast. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Ma Prem Rupta. Rupta is a certified holistic counselor who studied trauma healing, NLP, hypnosis, Enneagram and life mastery with Tony Robbins. Rupta offers personal development workshops and took sannyas in 1978 when she was just a child. Rupta, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
So, to start, tell us a little bit about how you came across Osho.
Well, you know, it goes a little bit back into the 70s. In the mid-70s, already by age 5, I was in boarding school. And when I was 7, my mom brought me out of boarding school. And she was starting to get very much involved into Tibetan Buddhism. And I had spent a few years in boarding school feeling very lost and, you know, missing my mother and missing sort of the contact that your mother gives you and the connection that your mother gives you. And that age is very early on that, you know, that's a very young age to miss your mother's nurturing affection. So when my mom brought me in the mid-70s up to a place in Semmeling in Dumfries, Scotland. The place is called Semmeling. I met these Tibetan Buddhists, and this was a remarkable moment for me because I had never seen anything like this. Many of them didn't even speak English, and I remembered them being with me and walking with me and laughing with me and smiling with me, and I just remembered their love and their care and their compassion. Of course, this was something my mother was able to give me, but I had never felt it at that level. You know, having coming out of a boarding school commune, now I was in a Tibetan Buddhist commune, and it was a completely big difference, especially for a young child. And it really opened me up into wonderment. And I would get up every morning at 6 a.m., and I would go down into the Tibetan temple they have with all the Tibetans chanting in a mantra that I had no idea what they were chanting. And I would sit with them every morning, and I would chant with them. And they would just smile at me and, you know, welcome me, invite me, include me, and I just felt so blessed in this. I didn't know what prayer was, and I didn't know what spirituality was. I didn't know what this sort of movement was happening inside of me. I just knew that I felt at home in this place. And I was very fortunate enough to meet the Karmapa, the 16th Karmapa, while he was still in his body. I had a few visitations with him, and as well as a private audience with him, a man who is recognized, of course, by the Dalai Lama, but a remarkable man, and taught me how to, you know, be silly and laugh, and, you know, was very affectionate and loved children. So I was very fortunate already to have this kind of connection and contact with these Buddhist monks. And there in that moment began a journey inside of myself that I was unaware of, for this sort of spiritual connection. It opened up something in me. I wasn't completely aware of what that was. And when we take the long ride from Scotland back down to London, which is many hours because it's many hundreds of miles, our life in London started to open up into new meditations and new, you know, surroundings, from the Hare Krishnas to the yogis, you know. And I remember then, you know, going in the center of London as a little child, going to this commune called Kalpataru, and it was in Camden Town. Actually, it was in Chalk Farm. And I remember you have to go into a big warehouse. And there, when you get to the top of the lift and you get to the top floor, yeah, you open up, and all of a sudden, there were all these orange people. Now, this wasn't my first contact with Osho. Already, we had some contact with Osho in another center in America when we had gone to visit there for a few months. And I remember feeling called towards him. but I didn't know really at that point what it was about. I just felt that sense of community and connection, but it wasn't as clear as it was when I started going to the meditations in Kaap Taru in London. And there I remember I was, I don't know, maybe 9 years old. I was doing Kundalini. There were adults all around me, and I was shaking, and I was looking at this photo of Osho. And by the way, when I say I'm shaking, for the listeners who might not know Kundalini meditation, that's part of the meditation. Yeah, it's a shaking movement meditation. And there I was looking at this photo, and I just remember going, "You're my teacher." That was it. It was sort of like it landed so strong inside of me. And I kept on going back again and again to this center and doing groups there with Varesh. And I don't know, you probably heard about Varesh, but he's very known in the community, as well as with Tirtha, who is now known as Paul Lowe. And they would let the kids in. So I was very lucky, even though sometimes I was the only child in the group. And I have many crazy stories in those groups. But that was the beginning of my entrance into, you know, meeting Osho. And from there, I just said, "Mom, I want to meet Osho. I want to take sannyas. I want to change my name. I want to change the color of my clothes." And she said yes to all of it. You know, she was even dyeing my underwear, you know, from white to orange. And even though she only has one child and she gave her one child a name, she was ready for her child to change her name and you know, go for what it was she wanted to go for. So it was a very clear yes inside me. A few months later, my mom decided also to take sannyas, and you know, she needed to find her own yes inside of her, of course, you know, because she had been so devoted to the Tibetan Buddhist way. And as a child, you know, we go with what, you know, moves in us and what is alive in us in that moment. And for me, Osho was the rebellious spirit I was looking for.
Okay, wonderful. So you were clearly very, very precautious, and you almost paved the way for your mom to also jump into sannyas. How then from London you ended up in India and living with Osho?
Well, we had a commune in Europe, which was, interestingly enough, it was a place for children. It was called Prempantha in Devon. And there many of us lived together. And I think I was there for a year. But then we opened up a bigger commune in Suffolk, called Medina, which you might have heard of, Medina, where it became, you know, kids and adults, very big center there. And from there, at a certain point, I think at one point I was about 13 or 14, not 13, I can't remember. Well, I went then to go be with Osho and with my mom, of course, because, you know, I wouldn't travel alone without her. And, you know, I had already been in the commune, and in those days, you could be in the commune without your mother. So I had chosen to live in Prempantha without my mother, even though many children were with their mothers and fathers. And I had also chosen to live in Medina alone without my mother. And probably because of the being in boarding school from age five, that independence was already very much part of my life, that to, you know, to be alone was also okay. My mom very much trusted me. So, but then of course, when we went to go to meet Osho, I went with her. Yeah.
And it's quite a quantum leap from the boarding school to an Osho commune, and then all the way to India with Osho.
You know, it was, the boarding school for me was probably one of my biggest traumas, if I can be honest about that, because it was so painful. I felt so separated, and I didn't know where I belong. And of course, we all have this sort of natural feeling of the need to want to belong, and, you know, even to the human race, to mankind. And because I was so lost at 5 years old, and a 5-year-old doesn't really have the practicalities already, you know, functioning in its head. So I was, I felt very lonely. I, of course, there were many things that happened to me during that time. I ended up in a hospital and all sorts of things as a little child that can happen without a parent supervising and being there for you in a boarding school where, you know, there are many children. I was the only 5-year-old. The rest were 10 years old. So I was already in a vulnerable position. And, when I came to Sannyas, when I came to Osho, I was just, there was such a big yes inside me. And there was, you know, this sense of community, connection, feeling like I belong, feeling like I'm part of something. And his rebellious spirit really spoke to me because in boarding school, we had to sing from the Bible. And no disrespect to the Bible, but it didn't sing to me. It wasn't my calling, yeah? It wasn't something that made me feel alive and woke me up, yeah? So, of course, when I'm singing with Osho, it's a completely different vibration, and I felt it was very much alive, and the master is alive, the teacher is alive. So, you know, you're singing with him there, present.
Yeah, that's what I love about Osho. One of the things I love about Osho that he is a rebel and he attracts all the rebellious spirits. We had in the podcast some other guests who lived as children or teenagers in the commune, and I'm always fascinated to hear the experience of being a child and teenager. In your case, it's almost like you 13, you're getting into your teens. So tell us a little, give us a bit of a sense of how it was for you to live as a teenager in the commune.
Yeah, I went from childhood in the commune to teenagehood to adulthood. So I experienced sort of all three aspects of, you know, what it, into growing into a woman. And in childhood, I can say that I loved that sort of being free and wild. Osho would say, let them just be free and wild. And in many ways, that just spoke to me because that was my spirit. And at the same time, of course, there are challenges in that because when you let a bunch of children be free and wild, the other side of it is that we were missing structure. And, you know, I didn't know it then as I do now. And so, of course, I would have liked some of that structure where maybe somebody would have said, hey, Rupta, what do you want to do when you grow up? But everybody was so into sort of the being in the present moment, talking about the future just seemed crazy. And there was no one that was listening to making plans for the future. So it was really in the now. And, as a child, that's just exactly where they are. You know, and I have so many fun stories where we used to, you know, go into the group rooms when all the adults are meditating. We used to make fun of them, you know, or we would sit in there and play and, you know, be with the teachers or, you know, have that freedom to be a child in the full expression of themselves. And, you know, we did naughty things, you know, and, you know, taking from the cookies from the cookie shop. And when we were, when they would catch us in the commune taking cookies from the cookie shop, they would say, okay, Rupta, you get now 7 days of dynamic meditation. And for us as little kids, that was like, oh no, 7 days of dynamic meditation. You know, as now, as an adult, I do it, you know, happily. But as a child, it was like a whole nother experience, you know. And so we had many different forms of, you know, being together as children. As a teenager, of course, there's, you're coming more into your development. And I loved sitting with Osho, and he would just sometimes talk for hours. And I just loved being still and present. And I really learned a new kind of way of being when I got into my teens. I also learned about my sensuality, my femininity, and being this young woman, you know, in her 13, 14, 15, and on, yeah. And Osho really didn't just talk about meditation, you know, we were sitting in stillness and embodying it. And for that, I am so deeply grateful that he brought meditation into, of course, everyone's life, and I speak for myself as well, the gratitude that he held so much, you know, He had such a deep sense of presence. And at the same time, he had such a wonderful sense of humor, you know, because he could speak about something very strong, very powerful, very impactful. And then at the end, complete it with a few jokes, you know, where we just completely, you know, end up laughing and the lightness of our being is, you know, expressed. And in this way, I'm very grateful as well, because he taught both the depth and the lightness, to have both. And that's why so many, I believe, you know, young children were drawn to him, because he really had a full range of awareness within him. I think you may have heard of the Wild Wild Country, which has been going on Netflix. And I was in the range from 13, 14, 15, and 16 in this time. And, you know, we, as teenagers, you know, we had a lot of enjoyment playing around, being in, it, again, it was a much bigger adventure playground for us, because it was the biggest commune we lived in. You know, the ashram was much smaller, Medina was much smaller, and Prempantha was even smaller. So this place where we could really be our little rebellious spirit was wonderful. And I remember Osho would really, you know, when he went into silence, it was not easy for many people. And but he would still be present with us, and we would sit in silence with him, and this I very much enjoyed. And when he would come every day at 2 o'clock and drive by with Osho, where we would all be in a line, and probably you maybe saw some photos of that or in the documentary, I think maybe, you know, when he would see us, he would stop, so, because he saw that I was young. So often he would stop and he would say hello, or he had many roses on his on top of his car, so he would hand me a rose, or, you know, he would smile at me and just stop. And I just remembered feeling so blissed out, because, you know, he was kind of, you know, when I look in his eyes, he was kind of in a very pure state of consciousness. That is my experience of him. Yeah. That he just really, there was just a simplicity about his, you know, being that felt uncomplicated and just very present. Yeah. So as a child, of course, we're very perceptive to that. And I really enjoyed that. And sometimes, you know, we would, on the ranch, we refer to the Wild Wild Country as the ranch. You know, as teenagers, we would get in trouble, because now we were not stealing cookies. We were we were trying to find ways to find a beer that we could share together. That was like really naughty, you know. And sometimes Sheila, who is was the mama, the big mama of the ranch, would call in all the teenagers, and we would get in trouble, and, you know, we would lose our special whatever job we had if we really got a really cool job, or we would be grounded, or whatever the, you know, consequences were. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget one day, I was working at that time with the cows. I fell in love with all the little baby cows. So that was my job, and feeding the little baby cows. And I got a message that Sheila wants to see you, and I was really nervous. And she's in her home, so I had to, you know, we had a whole bus system in the ranch, you know, meaning that it was so big that we had to take different buses to get to different places. And we even had bus stops, and which bus goes where, and it was very organized. And as I was getting closer and closer to where her house is, I was just getting more and more nervous. I remembered how nervous, you know, I could feel in the bottom of my belly and the solar plexus. What had I was thinking of all the things that I, you know, what had I done? And I was like, oh my gosh, I might have been about 14 or 15 by then, you know, and I was just trying to think, did I not do something? And, you know, and then I get to her house, and there were a few people there. They greeted me, and they said, Sheila is in her bedroom, and she would like to see you there. And I thought, my God, what? I was just so nervous. And as a little child, or as even as a teenager, you just, you know, you invent all sorts of things of what it might be. And then she saw me, and, you know, she said, Rupta, come sit down beside me. And I sat down beside her. And I've forgotten that she really took a liking to me, because, you know, to her, I was like this Indian girl, even though I'm not Indian. So every time she would see me, she would smile and she would like me, even though I was so scared of her. But, you know, so here I was sitting down. She was asking me, how are you? Da, 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 da. How is school? How is? And I was answering, and she could see I was super nervous. And then finally she said, Osho has a present for you. And I was kind of like shocked, you know. And then she opens a box and she said he wanted me to give you this. And it was a beautiful necklace that then she put around my neck for me. And I just remembered just the relief in my body that I hadn't done anything bad as a teenager. I was a bit of a rebellious teenager. They used to call me Rupta the Rebel. So it was possible that I might have done something. But I left that place. I left her place and I was completely, you know, elated and, you know, celebrating. And I was so grateful that I had that chance to, you know, to receive a gift, you know. And then I think a year later, again, I got called in. Sheila's home is called Jesus Grove. So I got called in there and probably I was nervous. And this time she said, Osho would like to dance with you. And he would do that sometimes. So one morning or one afternoon, I forgot what time of the day it was, I stood outside his house and I danced with him. And it was wonderful. And he just danced with me and I was jumping and he was getting me to jump even more. And I was thinking, Osho, I don't think I can jump so high. I was just jumping, and then, you know, and he was really shaking his hands because that's how he dances. And we just met eye to eye and it felt like the longest moment. It was probably only a few minutes, but it was lovely. Yeah. And then he just smiled. And I remember just feeling like, thank you so much. Really grateful to have that experience with him, because I know he loves children and he, you know, he would often stop when he saw me on the drive-by. So I know that, you know, there was this sweet moment of recognition, which of course I will always remember, you know.
What amazing story. I really love listening to it. Definitely one of the few lucky people who are in the grace of Sheila. Normally it's quite the opposite, so that's great. obviously you mentioned already a few times that you had this unique experience to be with Osho, sitting in silence during his talks. For me, it's something so people who had the chance are blessed, because in my understanding, someone like Osho comes every 2,000-3,000 years. So that's gone, even though we can still connect with Osho and enjoy his energy, but his physical presence is no more. And you were there, and that's incredible as a child. And also you had some personal contact with him. You mentioned that he gave you some special attention, that he loved children. So is there any personal advice that you got from Osho? Have you had any chance to ask him questions or receive any guidance?
You know, there were a few times when you would write to Osho, because you couldn't, as you could imagine, we couldn't just knock on the door and say, hey, Osho, can I pop in for a cup of tea? It would be lovely, but he would never get any sleep. So, you know, we would write in, and I wrote him multiple times, you know, about meditation, you know, guidance for that. And, you know, I wrote about having a decision to, you know, how to be in the world. And I'm trying to remember some of the things he told me. One of the things, he was always very supportive when I wrote to him. I felt always his support to do what feels right for me, follow my own inner guidance, and whatever it is, do it with totality. So, you know, I wrote him when I was 12, I wrote him when I was 15, I wrote him when I was 17, and, you know, I wrote him numerous times, you know, and if I wrote him about, you know, wanting to, you know, make a movement in life. Oh, yeah, I think one of them was, should I go to college? Because, you know, I was 21 and in an ashram with Osho, and I didn't know, like, would I spend the rest of my days with him? I didn't think that it would come to an end so soon. I thought maybe another 30 years at least. And I felt him always so supportive and loving. Yes, if that's what you want to do, do it with totality. But if you go, you really do it, yeah? And if you stay, then you really be here, you know? And I loved his way of being total with a decision. And, even if I was to write him and say, oh, I think I'm falling in love with someone. Okay, if you do it totally, that was the kind of feeling I often got with him. And it's a shame I don't have my letters in front of me of the things that I received. But this I can say was a very strong guidance from him. And awareness was one. Yeah, one of the keys I remember he wrote in there about having awareness to whatever's showing up in your life, you know, and how that can already help so much, you know. And I had that later on with one of my partners. Often would talk about awareness and the very same kind of principle in essence, yeah, when she would talk about it. I go, yeah, okay, yeah, that I remember Osho talking about that and saying that to me, and I very much can agree with that, yeah. So I also have to say that growing up from childhood to teenagehood to adulthood as a woman in a sort of a conscious commune, you know, I really appreciated how Osho really recognized the feminine. And I really felt like he honored the feminine. And that was really helpful for me to witness growing up as a young woman who is developing, you know. And one of the recognitions that Osho often would do is put women, you know, in different positions, holding in a leadership position and holding, you know, people together in a particular department or a team. And for that, I'm very grateful, because I really got to see different women in their essence. I see them in their power as well. And, like, you know, there is certainly, you know, different forms that power can take, yeah. But overall, my experience with many other different women is watching how they were leading and watching how they, you know, led groups, for example, or, you know, holding a team. And that was beautiful to witness, you know, that Osho was really supportive of that as a young girl growing up, you know, really supportive of that. And for that, I'm also very grateful.
I think this is another great contribution of Osho to the modern world, which, again, is not really acknowledged yet. And he was a pioneer, and he brought attention. Even in the spiritual world, women were up to Osho, were somehow put a little bit on the second level. And he criticized Buddha for that very strongly, even though he loved Buddha. But he was very clear on the topic of how he was reluctant to initiate women at the beginning. Whereas Osho wanted to somehow, I think he said in a discourse something like, I need to counterbalance and compensate all the wrongdoings against women in the history of mankind. So that, and you are a great example of that. So moving on to your present day life, talking about, you know, your profession and your life today, and how you embody and you integrate all that experience that you had with Osho. I understand that you are a coach and a therapist, and you also work a lot with what is called the millennials, the new generations. So tell us a little bit about that. First of all, if you can give us an overview of the millennials, the type of people that come to your workshops, and why do you like working with them?
Okay, yeah, absolutely. Just to say that from that experience growing up and watching how Osho was really sort of ahead in many ways, just like what you said, you know, he was ahead of his time. The fact that he allowed women to really stand in their essence and in their power and use their voice really inspired me to do the work I'm doing today, you know. And so it was a very natural step for me to do this kind of work, where I work with young individuals in leadership, and not only young individuals. It just happens that I'm very drawn to that sort of next generation. And the millennials are in the early 20s to the mid 30s. And, they're very much, you know, are connected to the, you know, the whole Wi-Fi and, you know, the whole device world, you know, and so in a way there's a disconnect, yeah. And there's a lot of, disconnection in themselves, disconnection with their, you know, family, and also disconnection as they move on with their partners. Yeah. And because it's such a, you know, men in their mid 30s are playing video games when wives are home and wanting connection. That's just one example. And I hear a lot about this in the group room when I work with them, about the disconnect and the pain that that creates. They kind of go into almost like an amnesia, a numbness, and they find themselves, you know, completely lost in that and very much feeling, you know, what is their purpose in life, feeling burnt out and overworked, overwhelmed, and not feeling their feelings often. And, you know, you get a lot of them who are using different forms of self-harm, which you might have heard about, which is where they start cutting themselves in order not to feel or in order to feel. Yeah. So it's sort of coming into a new paradigm of these millennials who are feeling frustrated with the status quo, with the sort of governments and systems and institutions that have been set up. And what's coming out of it is that they don't want to work for organizations that are only money driven. They want to work for organizations that have a conscious drive to them, that have, you know, an environmental impact. Yeah, it's not only about money for them anymore. So now they're changing that paradigm and saying, we want something different. And amazingly enough, I'm only hearing about it because they show up in my workshops and seminars, and they're sharing this stuff with me, that they want deeper connection, that they want to connect, that they want to feel themselves. And I feel them, I feel this generation is very ripe and very ready for a transformation, for stepping into something new, and for shifting a collective paradigm just by their own determination of wanting to step out of the old paradigm that we have created, yeah, which for them doesn't work. Yeah. So it took me some time to really understand and adjust to some of the things that I'm hearing and receiving, and, you know, and honoring what they're going through. But for me, I feel them very fertile and very ready for this work. And I ended up doing a lot of group work where I was supporting people through, you know, relationships and trauma work. I did a lot of that. And slowly, slowly, this work slowly shifted into leadership work, which is, again, connected to how Osho really supported that in women. And for that, again, I'm very grateful, because he really showed me something when I grew up in the environment of the commune. And that really allowed me to stand in my essence and my power, and to be able to hold others in that and to support others in that. So, you know, not only women who want to learn leadership because they see me doing it and they go, oh, wow, how can I bring this work into the corporate environment or the nonprofit environment, or, you know, the hospitals or the schools or the sports? You know, I get all sorts of, or I want to do workshops like you. You know, I get the young men are coming as well. And it's wonderful because they want to lead consciously. They want to learn how to do it differently from a place of presence, real presence. And by the way, Osho was just a living example of presence, which is one of the keys to really being there for others. Yeah. If I can't be present with myself, how can I be present with another? How can I support another? Yeah. How can I lead another if I can't really be present with myself? And not only present with myself, present with whatever shows up inside myself. Yeah. My discomfort. Yeah. My frustrations. Yeah. All of it, yeah, not just the happy stuff, so that I can hold myself in it and also hold you in what shows up. So they go very much together. And for me, there is a new kind of conscious leadership coming out of that, yeah, where they're stepping more into being transparent and authentic and showing their vulnerability and being honest, taking risks, being brave. Yeah. And so I love that. I really have to say, I love this, you know, readiness that is coming from that generation and wanting to step into that. Yeah. And hopefully, let's see, maybe we will see in the next coming generations that they will start to have a ripple effect, because after the millennials comes the centennials, and they're already turning into their teens, you know, and their late teens. So they're coming up next, you know. So how we lead the next generation affects the next generation. And of course, that is my prayer, that we find a new way to really be able to relate in a more conscious way with each other.
The work you're doing, I think, is absolutely vital and important and very valuable. I used to feel personally a big dichotomy between what were my interests with Osho, meditation and spirituality, and the, you know, the normal life and the work. Whereas now I see more and more people who are in their jobs, who are in corporates, in corporations, or any other type of jobs. At the same time, they are interested in meditation. So I think you're working with that kind of people, if I understand correctly.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it is the young generation, but it's also the, you know, my generation are coming as well. You know, they're seeing that the old system isn't really working. They're scared of the boss. They're scared to communicate to the boss and, you know, collaborate in that way with the boss. And yet there's this hunger, this thirst to want to do things differently. Yeah, to have a different way of leading where it's more inclusive and more collaboration and more, you know, listening and less, you know, telling. Yeah. And, you know, this is how you have to do it, and more, you know, connection. And, you know, this is why people sometimes bring me into the corporate environment, because I come in and, you know, I often say, okay, let's just work on connection. Let's work on, am I connected here with myself? And then maybe I can then connect with another, then maybe I can connect with life around me. But you find one of the first things people experience is the disconnect in themselves, which is in the work environment. So every day they go into that same environment, you know, and in their anguish or in their, you know, the monkey mind is going full force. Sally doesn't like me, John doesn't like me, or no one's, you know, asking me into the meeting or whatever it is. And it creates a kind of a unhealthy environment for them. And then when you are able to just even do some simple work around, you know, helping people come into connection, not only with each other, but with themselves. Wow, it's amazing. They can look eye to eye. They can, you know, breathe in all the way into their bellies. They can even maybe make some contact. They can even speak some truth and be honest. And, you know, I've always been scared of you, or I've always been intimidated by you, but I've actually really wanted to get to know you, or, you know, and so on. And then amazing what that then creates, a seed of consciousness and awareness, and you know, for people to take another step in how they can relate with one another. Of course, if you have an old paradigm in a company, an organization, the boss is at the top and you can't talk to him because he's or she is very angry, and you know, the management's like that as well, then it's, you know, it takes more work. But if you have a willingness where you have people who are willing to look at their staff and willing to look at how they got their, you know, system set up the way it is and what's not working, then it's amazing, you know, what can change. And by the way, I just want to say something that's really important. A millennial told me this, and I really like it. And maybe it's obvious, but it just really landed when they told me, which is that people are not really looking to governments to make change. You know, because in the way governments used to be the big power player, you know, and now it's really corporations. Corporations, I mean, in many ways, you know, the corporations have the government in their pocket, you know, it's like it's somehow changed, you know, and now the corporations are the ones making the big decisions, the environmental impact and decisions on how we interact or don't interact, you know, so, you know, and how we, you know, are the carbon footprint we leave and the environmental footprint, but also the conscious footprint and the people footprint and how we treat each other and the ethics. And when you have people coming in and saying, we want to do it differently, that changes something. That really does. And, you know, I got a phone call last year from an email last year from a lovely lady who worked in Nike. And she told me, Rupta, there's a whole management team in Nike that would love for you to do some work there. And just the fact that Nike was open to having someone like me who's, I can only be Rupta, by the way. When you see me in a workshop or a seminar, I can only be Rupta, you know, so I'm not going to be some, you know, I'm not a big spiritual chanting person. I will if I go to a concert for sure, but I'm very grounded, down to earth approach, and also with a big heart and connection to the spirit world, of course. So, but I was very happy that when I hear these corporations are starting to open up to, you know, a different way, a conscious way of, you know, doing their business, then that tells me that there's something shifting.
Wonderful. And I totally agree with you. And of course, there is a long way to go, but I see this happening. In the corporate world, they started to run self-development works, meditation, awareness. It's no more a completely separate thing. You know, the fact that you are invited at Nike is a great news, and hopefully you can do more and more work and bring more and more of your loving energy and awareness and a little bit of rebelliousness of Osho as well, if I may add.
Yeah, it's the work I love to do. And it's something that, you know, I actually now offer a training for people who want to learn how to step into the leadership. And I'm just passionate about it. I'm passionate about teaching people, you know, to do this work and to stand in their power and, you know, and to lead, you know. And I can say from my own experience that the more conscious leaders we have out there willing to take a risk, to be brave and, you know, to believe in themselves and support others, you know, the world maybe can be even closer to being a better place. You know, that would be my intention.
Absolutely. The last part of the interview, I'd like to talk also a little bit about the what's known nowadays as conscious communities. Because obviously, if someone that comes to your workshops and they work in a corporate environment and they may have some colleagues interested, even sometimes the manager or the boss who is into meditation, etc., but still, it's very difficult to create that relaxed atmosphere where you can really relate heart to heart with people around you. So I think it's always important that someone who is trying to make a difference in the corporate world, but then they have a chance to perhaps have a 2 weeks holiday and go somewhere where they can really let go and relax and connect with the like-minded spirits. So I know that you live in Corfu, and I understand that Corfu is an example of this conscious community. So can you give us a bit of a sense of what's going on in Corfu?
Yeah, Corfu is beautiful. I mean, I've loved being going there since 2003, and I've watched it slowly, slowly grow and grow and grow, and to where it is today, which is, you know, each year that it feels like it's almost like a conscious mecca of people coming, especially during the summer season, and coming for, you know, everything from yoga to meditation to, you know, different spiritual workshops. I do a woman's retreat there. Actually, in September, I will be doing one just for women. And, you know, there are many people bringing their work there and many people going there to do couples retreats, and all sorts of things are happening there. It really has a pulse. It really has a, you know, something alive there. And the community there is held by, you know, different conscious people. And certainly there's also an Osho community, and also the locals, the Greeks, them over the last 20 years have really been seeing a change, especially in that part of the island, which is called Arelas. And Arelas has really seen a transformation over the last 20 years. And they've really, the locals have adjusted to it in such a beautiful way and have created, you know, a wonderful kind of atmosphere and environment in the local town just for these people who come each year. And it's growing and growing. I mean, you can sing mantras and sit by the sea, do yogas. I mean, there's all sorts of activities going on. And it's really a prayerful place as well, because when you sit there by the sea watching the sunset, it just takes your breath away, you know, and then you get to be there with so many people, like-minded people who are thinking in the same progressive way or, you know, conscious way. It's wonderful. You can have deep connections, deep conversations, you know, what more to ask for?
Wonderful, and great to hear that we do have such type of place in Europe, because I think many people look for these kind of situations in Asia. That was me. I've been traveling in Asia lately to experience this kind of conscious communities, which so-called conscious communities, some of them don't think they're very conscious, but that's my personal judgment. And to have it in Europe is amazing, you know? So we are heading towards the end, and I have three final questions. But before that, is there anything else you would like to add?
No, I mean, personally, it's been an honor to speak with you, and I really appreciate that this space is, you know, available, what you have created for people who are curious about Osho, or people who know Osho, people who, you know, just love Osho. And, you know, I very much appreciate that his stories and messages through the people who have been with him continue to, you know, go on.
Thank you very much. Yes, let's keep it alive. Okay, so I've got three final questions. And the first one is, what's your morning routine? How does your morning look like in the first couple of hours of your day?
Okay, yeah. Well, right now, it's been in the last 6 months. I wake up and I have a lemon water first thing, and then I go into my room or I go on the deck depending on the weather, and I stretch my body, and then I sit probably, can be anywhere from 20 minutes to an hour. And so it's depending, it can sometimes be only 10 minutes because of I have to go do something. So, and then after that, a nice shower, and very, very, very cold shower as a practice that I do. And then I slowly start my day. Usually I write a little bit, or I plan the next event or workshop, and or connect with others in some way or another.
Amazing. And cold showers are a great habit. Chetan and I, we have done the whole Wim Hof experience, and we are convert of the cold and we love it. So it's lots of benefits, and that's a whole different discussions. So the second question is, what's your favorite meditation and why?
Oh, wow. You know, I have to say, as much as I've probably done more dynamic than any other meditation, Osho meditation, I do love Kundalini, because of course it was the first meditation I ever had, and I just remembered the energy that was moving through my body unlike anything I had ever experienced. And I was a child, so, you know, I know I didn't have much of life on the planet by that point, but I just remembered how strong it was. And so that's a strong one for me, Kundalini. I think because it was the first, and it remains somewhere deep in my heart. And then, of course, the Four Directions is, anyway, it's beautiful, powerful meditation that takes me into a space of no mind. Yeah.
Okay, so the last question is, you lead the Osho experiment. What does it mean to you personally to be with Osho today?
Wow, good question. You know, I have... good question. For me to be with Osho today, it's like an intimate connection. I feel that I have a very intimate connection in a way that, because I'm not completely outspoken about it. What I mean is, when I start a group and workshop or seminar, I'm very transparent about Osho, my upbringing, and how much he is a big part of my life and how much he influenced me. And at the same time, I'm very delicate with not putting too much on people so that they don't feel any kind of pressure from me. So Osho is more something I live and breathe and embody and experience. And he comes to me in my dreams quite a lot. And he comes to me as a voice inside of me when guidance is, you know, so the moment I speak in that direction towards him, I feel him present. And anytime I feel a disconnect, one of the things I do is a beautiful guided meditation. I usually do for my groups, but I also give it to myself, which is sitting in silence and just imagining people I love are surrounding me, and Osho's always there. And then my whole nervous system comes into relaxation.
Wow, this is so nice to hear. Wonderful. And I think you are outspoken in the sense that, you know, looking at your website, it's clear that you were with Osho. And for me personally, when it comes to Osho, I kind of want everyone to see Osho for who he is, but that's not possible. And I think a more mature way is like just be myself. And if people see something in me, and then I say, look, you know, it's probably likely due to my connection with Osho, then it can have an impact.
Yeah, that is exactly it, what you said. And by embodying that, you know, people will say, wow, what is it about him or her? And they're like, you know, some fragrance, something, you know, something alive, passionate. And then when people find out, oh, my teacher's Osho, and they go, wow. And then sometimes people say, can I take sannyas? You know, and I go, of course, you know. So, you know, because you are a living, you know, a breathing example of yourself. But of course, Osho is part of that. Yeah. And they, you know, they feel it. They feel that spirit, that rebellious spirit.
Haha, yes, I love it. So we can end on the note of the rebellious spirit. So Rupta, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure talking to you, connecting with you. Lots of love.
Lots of love to you too, darling. Thank you so much.
Bye now.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it and leave a review. Visit loveosho.com for more episodes, blogs, or to connect with us.